Chapter 3. Remade. A Summons. In Bellus Veritas. When the ship left the warp, Tylos Rubio finally understood where he was being taken, and gained the first true inkling of what that might mean for his future. He sensed the vessel transition from the madness of the warp and return to real space, the impression of the change pressing in on his mind even though he did not wish it. There were no guards posted outside his quarters, but he had no doubt he was under surveillance as he made his way down the corridor to an observation cupola that grew out of the starship's outer hull. There he stood and watched as the smoky disk of distant Jupiter passed by them, and knew that he had come to Sol, to the seat of the Imperium itself. Rubio had never seen Terra with his own eyes. A son of the 500 worlds, born and bred on mighty Ultramar, he felt a connection to the throne world in the loyalty to Emperor and Imperium that was central to his nature as a space marine. But that connection was an ephemeral thing, an ideal rather than an emotion. In a way, Terra had always seemed distant to Rubio, far removed from the battles and duties he fought in its name. But now it was real. He stood watch for hours until the planet grew through the cupola from an indistinct dot against the void to a dark orb lit by a halo of gargantuan works about it. Shipyards, gun shoals, command stations, the decorations of war to come surrounded the planet, and the sight brought an odd chill to Rubio's blood. Then the ship turned away, and the dead landscape of Luna filled the view. He became aware of a crew servitor waiting in the corridor nearby. "Speak," he told it. The machine slave did not. Instead, it offered him a folded slip of plas paper bearing an embossed seal, and within he found what would be the first order of his new existence. The summons brought Rubio to the highest tier of the Somnus Citadel, and in the harsh monochrome light he saw Garrow on the far side of the glass-walled chamber. The other warrior stood like a sentinel, a statue of ceramite and steel, bone and flesh. In his plain armor, the former Death Guard seemed somehow unfinished. His hairless, scarred scalp was lined with the furrow of his brow, and his eyes were eternally watchful. If Rubio looked closer, he knew he would see the edges of regret that ran deep in the warrior's heart. But it was not seemly to speak of such a thing. It was not his place. His place. Was there such a thing for Rubio now? He pulled his nondescript robe tighter around his shoulders. Beneath it, he wore fatigues of simple cut, the sort of thing in which a Legion serf or indentured helot might be garbed. They had taken away all that had showed his legion and his fealty, and Rubio had not given it easily. The Ultramarine had finally allowed his armor to be removed, and only then on the express order of the regent himself. Still, he greatly begrudged it. There was a truth that he had never voiced, but standing here in this great hall, it made itself plain to him. Little by little, the great crusade had chipped away at Tylos Rubio. At the start, he had been a codicia, a ranked brother of the Librarius, a war psychic at the head of his legion's 21st company, fighting for the triumph of Ultramar with courage and honor. Alongside his Primarch, he marched for Macragge beneath banners of blue and gold. Memories of those days were bittersweet. There had been such glory, with many enemies dispatched and many worlds saved from the abyss. Through it all, Rubio had used his unique, preternatural talents as a superlative weapon. He was a psyker, a warrior of the mind, capable of calling lightning from his hands and spinning dread through the hearts of his foes. He had been so very, very good at it. Magnus the Red took that from him. The Lord of the Thousand Suns Legion, a mighty psyker in his own right, had earned the Emperor's displeasure by dabbling with the darker powers of the psychic realm. Magnus's reckless games with the warp earned harsh censure, and in the aftermath, the Emperor forbade the use of any psychic power across all legions to preclude any future chance of misuse. With a single edict, Rubio's ultimate ability was forbidden to him. But he was still a warrior of the Legionis Astartes. Even without his mind-amplifying psychic hood, and with his greatest weapon silenced, He could still fight for the Imperium with blade and bolt gun. And in the moments when his hobbled status troubled him, Rubio would remain stoic and show nothing. After all, he had still been an ultramarine. But now that too had been taken. On battle-scarred Kalth, as the sky blackened, Rubio lost something that could never be measured. To save the lives of his kinsmen, he had made a terrible choice, and the echo of it had clouded his mind all the way back to Sol. Rubio had broken the Emperor's edict and called upon his shackled powers to beat back the enemy. In doing so, he had betrayed a sworn oath. His battle brothers lived, but as one, they turned their backs upon him.
"Does that make me a traitor?"
Rubio pushed the disturbing thought away, but it lingered, like a thunderhead on the far horizon.
"I'm here, Garrow," he said. "What do you want of me?"
The battle captain turned to study him, his eyes searching Rubio's face for some measure of his mood.
"The voyage back from the Viridian system was arduous. Are you rested?"
"I'm ready to return to the battle, if that is what you mean."
Garrow shook his head.
"We have not been called to fight a war, Rubio. Other men will challenge Horus's rebellion in open conflict. We are on a different path."
"And where does it lead?"
Irritation flared in him.
"You dragged me away from my brethren. You took me from my rightful place. Tell me it was for a good reason."
Rubio cast a look down at his characterless robes.
"What duty can I undertake like this? Where is my armor? Where are my weapons?"
The other legionary's reply was solemn. "Your war gear was your last connection to your legion, brother. You no longer need it." Garrow turned towards the windows and gestured towards the black and grey beyond.
"Look out there."
Rubio frowned, but did as he was asked. Out past the thick glassaic panes, there was only the airless wilderness of the lunar surface, and rising up above the rocks and craters, the curtain of great night. Stars, hard and bright like diamond, cast out the lines of the galaxy beyond.
"Millions of worlds and billions of souls upon them," said Garrow. "Each one with a gun to their head, for assurance of fealty. Each with a blade at their neck, ready to take blood for sacrifice. But you know as well as I, brother. I imagine you hear the cries of the dead and the betrayed louder than I ever could."
Unbidden, the spectre of distant gunfire, of screaming and the sounds of battle, rose and fell in Rubio's thoughts, as if from a faint memory. He stiffened. Garrow went on.
"A war like no other has come to the Imperium of Mankind, and I was cursed to be there at the birth of it."
He opened his arms to the other legionary.
"I was once a battle captain of the 14th Legionis Astartes, the Death Guard. Like you, one of the Emperor's chosen angels of death. We shared the same mission as the Sons of Ultramar, the bringing of illumination. The greatest undertaking in human history, to forge a transgalactic empire that would be glorious and eternal."
He looked away, sorrow flashing in his eyes.
"Such a grand dream. A magnificent endeavor. But broken now. Shattered and crumbling to ashes. The Emperor's plan has been ruined by the most petty and human of things. Treachery.
Horus Lupercal."
The name fell from Rubio's lips in synchrony with Garrow's statement. The War Master and his foul deeds were so inexorably linked in the legionary's thoughts that it could be no other way. The Primarch of the 16th Legion had rebelled against his father, and even after the days of reading the reports and missives explaining the horror of it, Rubio still found it hard to grasp.
"Some said it was from a kind of madness. Others that he had been poisoned by Xenos' influence," said Garrow. "But I have come to believe it was something base and simple that took Horus to betrayal's path. Jealousy, resentment, distrust. These most human emotions are still extant in a warlord like Horus, even though the great Primarchs were meant to be above such matters. It is troubling to admit, brother. If those so mighty can fall, what hope is there for us? His gaze turned back towards the legionary. Can we transcend what we are? Will true illumination forever be beyond our reach?
Rubio could find no answer. Against all reason, Horus's call to revolt had not died unborn. Others, the Emperor's children, the world-eaters, iron warriors and word-bearers among them, were joining the bloody rebellion. And now, across a galaxy split by terrible warp storms, they burned planets once held in the Imperium's name. If what he had been told was true, then, world by world and star by star, the madness he had witnessed firsthand on Kalth was inching ever closer to Terra and the Emperor's throne. Garrow's gaze dropped, and his voice became a whisper.
To my eternal disgrace, I saw my own legion follow Horus into disloyalty, led by my gene father, Mortarion. I watched powerlessly as my battle brothers spat on their vows and took the Death Guard to the traitor's banner.
And yet you live still, spared by both your turncoat kinsmen and those still loyal.
Rubio's bitterness coloured the words.
How so?
If Garrow noted Rubio's mordant tone, he did not comment on it.
In defiance of my master for daring to choose Emperor over Legion, I was marked for death. And in the end, I fled the devastation at Istvan, where the war began, racing for Terra to carry the warning of Horus's intentions.
He took a long breath.
I am Death Guard no longer. My armor has no mark upon it, but for the brand of the Sigilite. As Horus, may his name be cursed, and his followers threw off their loyalty, so I have shed my old identity and been made anew. I stand before you now a warrior without brothers, a legionary with no legion.
A bleak smile pulled briefly at his mouth.
What was the name you gave me on Kalth? Yes, I recall. I am a knight errant, cast against a dark background. I have a new oath, to be the Sigilite's hand amid the murk and the fire of this hateful schism.
Despite his circumstances, Rubio could not hold back his curiosity.
To what end, Garrow?
For the future.
He gestured towards the darkness, and Rubio followed his direction, finding Terra low in the sky, half in shadow.
Somewhere upon that sphere, the Emperor is at work on designs so complex that none can comprehend them. In the meantime, we must protect him from whatever threats come to pass. And there are such great threats at hand, Rubio. You saw a sliver of that on Kalth, and I must tell you there is far, far worse ahead of us.
The hard certainty behind Garrow's words gave Rubio pause. There was no deceit in him. The other warrior's expression spoke of what sickening truths he had been exposed to, and of the anger it kindled. At length, Garrow beckoned Rubio to follow him.
Come with me. We will make you ready.
For what?
For the new conflict.
The Somnus Citadel's armory was a forge of war, with dozens of machine slaves and techno-serfs busy at the repair and maintenance of battle gear. The golden armor and shining greatswords of the Sisters of Silence, the Citadel's keepers, dominated the chamber. Their blades hung from every wall, alongside powerful flame cannons and assault guns. But as impressive as they were, none of these instruments of conflict could ever match the weapons of the Legiones Astartes. Garrow led Rubio towards an alcove, where a group of patient servitors stood at attention.
There, brother. Do you see?
He pointed towards an arming rack 6 meters in height, upon which lay a suit of power armor almost identical to his own war gear. It was a highly advanced build, fresh from the Manufactorum, and like Garrow's armor, it was denuded of sigil and symbol, save for the discreet rendition of a stylized eye, almost indistinct upon one of the pauldrons, the mark of the sigilite. A simple librarius tabard hung from the waist. At Rubio's approach, the arming rack hissed open, and servitors gathered, ready to assist him in donning the ceramite plate. He hesitated. In his service to the Imperium, Rubio had never worn anything but the cobalt blue of the Ultramarines. never borne any sigil but the legion's revered Ultima. To consider doing so now would seem like a kind of betrayal. Garrow understood the sentiment only too well.
"If I accept this," began Rubio, "what becomes of me? I will lose what I was. I will no longer be a son of Ultramar."
"This is not about legion or birthplace," Garrow told him. "This is a matter of greater import than the world you called home or the Primarch you saluted. You and I, and the others to come, we give our loyalty to a new truth, a new ideal. We remember what we were, but rise to something beyond. We serve the Emperor of Mankind. That will never change. You swore an oath of moment on Kalth, Rubio. Now, make it whole. Take the armor. Join me."
For a long moment, Garrow thought the Codicia might refuse him and strike out in fury, but then that urge faded from his eyes, and he nodded.
"Very well."
Rubio mounted the rack and spread his arms wide to accept the martial embrace of open brassarts, vambraces, and breastplate. Servitors secured the torso sections and greaves, the thick-set boots and gauntlets. He tipped back his head as the gorget locked into place, and with a low, bone-deep purr of coiled power, the microfusion generator in the armor's backpack became active. Next, the pauldrons settled into place. Piece by piece, Rubio became a war machine in the figure of a man. Garrow recalled the moment when he had stood in the same place, remembering how it had troubled him deeply. Rubio was passing through the same turning point now, uneasy with the oath he had cemented by this act. His former identity was lost to him now, and in its place he had gained a new status, one he had yet to be certain of.
"I know, brother," Garrow wanted to say. "I know how this feels."
The arming process halted, and silence fell.
"It is done," said Rubio,
with the air of a man facing the gallows. But Garrow shook his head once more.
"Not yet, brother. There is still your greatest weapon."
He gestured to the servitors and bade them set the final piece of armor into place. A black iron capsule suspended above the arming rack cracked open, and from it descended a construct of arcane power, humming with latent energy. The psychic hood was a complex array of crystalline matrices and energy conduits, attuned to the unique resonance patterns of the immaterium. The servitors set it in place around Rubio's head, and the device came to life, immediately bonding itself to his telepathic engrams. The Codicia tensed as familiar power reawakened in him, a force of will that had been silenced for too long. Garrow watched the potency return to him as abilities that had lain dormant since the decree of Nikea danced at Rubio's fingertips.
"Now, it is done," he said.
The arming frame hissed open, and Rubio stepped down, fully armored and ready for battle. The armor was a second skin. Plasteel and ceramite matched to meat and bone through the conductive surface of the black carapace bioimplant interface beneath his flesh. He tested the gauntlets, flexing the fingers. It felt right, but the conflict within him did not entirely fade.
"You accept your duty," said Garrow, with formality. "Take these weapons and use them in the Emperor's name."
The other warrior handed him the heavy frame of a bolter and a sword in its scabbard. Rubio smiled slightly as he held the blade in his hand. It was a gladius, the traditional sword form of the Ultramarines, and upon it, in a most subtle manner, was the shape of the revered Ultima. He realized that Garrow was allowing him to retain one small token of the legion he was giving up.
"Gratitude, brother."
The words turned to ice and ashes in his mouth. A sudden flash of psychic energy bloomed. The tremor of mind sense came from nowhere, pressing in on Rubio's thoughts. He hesitated, fixing Garrow with a hard gaze.
"What is wrong?"
Rubio did not answer. His telepathic skills were slow with disuse and unfocused, but still he felt a strange sense of something buried deep in Garrow's mind. Another kind of truth, hidden under layers of the Stoic Death Guard's thoughts. A secret belief that could not be read. A fleeting image passed across his mind's eye.
An icon. A golden Aquila.
Every part of Rubio wanted to question what he had sensed, but now he felt another presence looming closer, burning brighter than the chemically neutered thinking of the servitors, fierce and harsh, with the razor edges of a mind used to the act of killing.
Someone approaches.
Ho! Garrow turned as a hatch ground open to admit a broad figure clad in shining and ornate golden armor. The figure scanned the room with the gaze of a killer, finding the two legionaries and taking their gauge in an instant. He towered in the hatchway, tall enough that Rubio was forced to look up at him, a rarity in itself. Yet the warrior in gold seemed uninterested in the former ultramarine.
You are Garrow.
It was a statement, not a question.
I am.
The legionary bristled at the open challenge in the words.
You will bring your cohort and follow me. Now.
The new arrival did not wait to see if they would obey. He simply turned on his heel and returned the way he had come, marching down the citadel's vaulted corridors towards the primary airlocks. Garrow's lips thinned at this blatant show of arrogance, but he followed nonetheless, with Rubio a step behind. On the face of it, they both had little choice. One did not simply refuse a member of the Emperor's custodian guard without good cause. He identified himself as Kurarin. At least, that was all he was willing to give them for the moment. The warriors of the Legio Custodes possessed honor names of varying length, each supplementary appellation presented to them in recognition of services to the Emperor and the Throne of Terror. Garrow had heard of custodians with more than 1,000 names, every one inscribed across the inside of their armor. He could not help but wonder how many names came after Kurarin. It was said that as the legionaries were to their primarchs, so the custodians were to the Emperor. The personal guard of the Imperium's ruler, they were his ultimate defenders. Indeed, it was a rare thing to encounter a custodian off Terra. They only left the Imperial Palace for matters of the greatest import, and then alone or in small numbers. The warrior cut an imposing, threatening figure, taller than Garrow even in his warplate. The custodian's ornate golden armor was emblazoned with intricate designs of lightning bolts, imperial aquilae, and complex scrollwork. A blood-red cloak fell back over his broad shoulders, and under one arm the custodian held a tall, conical helmet with a sculpted eagle across the brow and a plume of crimson horsehair at the tip. He had an olive-toned complexion and dark eyes, and instead of the guardian spear more typical of his kind, Kurarin was armed with a heavy, broad-bladed sword that mounted twin bolt guns in its hilt. He marched swiftly and with purpose, never once deigning to cast a glance towards the two legionaries. The aggrandized superiority of the Legio Custodes was well documented, and their manner was often the source of friction with outsiders. Garrow had no reason to suspect that Kurarin would disprove that assumption. Rubio was the one to break the silence.
Where are we going?
Kurarin answered without acknowledging the other legionary.
A shuttlecraft has been prepared. You will both accompany me to the Imperial Fleet battleship Nolandia. The vessel is in lunar orbit, awaiting my return.
A scowl darkened Garrow's face.
To what end? That will be made clear when deemed necessary. Death Guard.
The barely veiled insult could not have been clearer if Kurarin had simply said turncoat and been done with it.
Perhaps I consider it necessary now. And to be clear, I no longer serve the 14th Legion.
Of course, the custodian allowed.
If you did still march for the traitor Mortarion, you would have been executed by now.
Garrow's temper flared at the slight, but Kurarin did not allow him the chance to respond.
The command I bear comes from Lord Malkador, Regent of Terra. You are sworn to obey him, are you not? He wishes it, and so you will join me in my mission, despite my insistence that your presence is not required. For the moment, that is all that is necessary for me to reveal. As you wish.
It took effort not to rise to the bait, and Garrow exchanged a grim look with Rubio. The codicia said nothing, but his expression was enough to make his thoughts clear. Warriors of the Legiones Astartes were not used to being ordered around like the common mortal soldiery of the Imperial Auxilia, and such a lack of respect would have earned other men a sword point at their throat. But to speak out of turn to a custodian was seen almost as insolence towards the Emperor himself. Garrow was conflicted. He had respect for any warrior judged worthy enough to stand at the Emperor's side and bask in that divine glory. But he chafed at Kuraren's ill-concealed and misplaced distrust. The custodian was not reticent to show that he considered Garrow unworthy of his regard, doubtless casting the battle captain in the same light as the rest of his former legion. As they reached the airlock, Rubio could hold his silence no longer.
"If you will say nothing else, can you at least tell us what kind of enemy we will face on this endeavour?"
Kuraren came to an abrupt halt and turned a hard glare on the codicia.
"The worst of them all," he growled. "Traitors!"
Kuraren's shuttle was a sleek Aquila-class courier, a heavily modified surface-to-orbit variant painted in the gold and crimson livery of the Custodian Guard. Unlike the workhorse Stormbirds and Thunderhawks that the legionaries were used to, the shuttlecraft was almost extravagant in its design. It seemed out of place compared to the slab-sided monolith that was the Nolandia, a bright jewel resting against an ingot of crude iron. The capital ship was kilometres long, heavy with countless weapons batteries. Great sheets of ablative armour gave the vessel the look of a massive, elongated castle, as if an ancient stronghold from Terra's prehistory had fallen through time and space to be mated to powerful warp engines and cannons mighty enough to crack open moons. As soon as the smaller craft had been pulled aboard, the Nolandia accelerated away, its drives echoing through its hull like the rumble of captured thunder. Her navigator charted a course out of Terra's orbital path towards the perimeter of the solar system, and the vessel passed the great shoals of construction satellites, busy with urgent builds to bolster the fleets, and the autonomous gunnery platforms bristling with macro cannons and defense lasers. Other cruisers of smaller tonnage and system monitor ships without warp engines crowded out of the Nolandia's way, obeying the pennants of high rank flying from its signaling masts. The battleship left Terra behind in its thrust wake, the last sight of the throne world passing into eclipse behind a gargantuan, shining fortress. The Phalanx, Starfort and Monastery of the Seventh Legion, Rogel Dawn's Imperial Fists. Out across the orbits of Mars and the Jovian colonial axis, the Nolandia burned hard and fast towards the haze of the Kuiper Belt, the region of scattered ice asteroids that mark the edge of solar space. Out there, at the Mandeville Point, where warp ships could revert to normal space at the end of their transits, the sun was cold and distant, the stars alien and unwelcoming. Out there, nothing moved but perimeter patrols of frigates and destroyers, and the swarms of machine-mined warning drones. All of them watching and waiting for the first sign of the invasion that would inevitably come. A week, or a month, a year, or a decade. However long it took, eventually the War Master's fleets would reach this empty expanse of the void. It was only a matter of time. A few days into the voyage, after it became clear that the custodian was in no hurry to brief the legionaries on their mission at hand, Garrow sought out Kuraren. He was drawn to the sounds of power swords tearing plasteel and the crash of weapons striking, the low animal grunts of constant exertion from a fight that showed no sign of coming to an end. No one among the vessel's crew had dared challenge the custodian when he demanded exclusive use of the Nolandia's combat training ring. Kuraren's orders to the shipmaster had been succinct. Nothing, short of the arrival of the arch-traitor Horus himself, was to interrupt his sparring. Garrow learned that he had steadily worked his way through the ship's entire complement of training servitors, leaving them in smoking heaps as he dispatched them, one at a time or in groups. Each servitor learned from the mistakes of the one that preceded it, but still, after hours of dueling, not one of them had been able to lay a single blow upon the custodian. The legionary watched the flash and fire of Kuraren's sentinel blade as it obliterated a mechanoid wielding dual chain axes in short order. It was an impressive sight.
"Slave!"
Kuraren sensed the presence in the chamber with him and called out, expecting to be obeyed.
"Clear away that wreckage! Bring me another!"
Garrow stepped into view.
"There are no others," he explained. "You have destroyed them all. Pity."
The custodian was filmed with sweat, panting with exertion, but he seemed by no means fatigued.
"I was hoping to find something that might test me,
for a moment at least. He pointed with the sword bolter in his hand towards Garrow's scabbard. The blade you carry is a fine tool. You call it Libertas, yes? Garrow's hand slipped automatically to the sword's pommel.
You are well informed.
Kurarin showed his teeth.
I would see how it fares in combat.
That has all the colour of a challenge. The legionary said the words carefully, without weight.
Does it?
The custodian gave a derisive snort.
I don't expect you to be imprudent enough to accept. The Death Guard have never tolerated the reckless or the foolish in their ranks, after all.
Libertas rang as it left its scabbard.
You'd be surprised, said Garrow, crossing the perimeter of the fighting ring.
Kararin's grin widened.
Very well. To the first mark, then?
Aye. Garrow turned the weapon in his grip, pushing aside the doubts in his thoughts.
First mark.
They saluted with their blades, and then the storm began. Swords clashed violently, sparks flying, mirror-bright metal dancing back and forth. Kurarin was unlike any opponent Garrow had faced. It was said that even a Primarch would hesitate at meeting one of the Emperor's custodians in the arena, and as he fought to hold his ground through the whirlwind of Kararin's blade strikes, Garrow could believe it. It was almost impossible to do anything other than defend, and he was quickly at the limit of his skills, fighting to place his power sword at the points where the custodian stabbed and slashed with his own weapon. He parried every hit, but the blows were like thunder, shaking his bones inside his battle armor. There was a moment when an opening showed itself, and Garrow almost took the chance, turning the hilt of Libertas by reflex, but he stopped himself and let the moment pass. Too easy. Too inviting. A flicker of annoyance in Kararin's eyes confirmed it. It had been a feint to catch him off guard. The custodian's attack pattern changed abruptly, intensifying, pushing Garrow back across the training ring towards the piles of wrecked servitors. He suddenly realized that Kararin had been toying with him. This was his real intent, blade ringing upon blade as he beat him down with precise, brutal force. He had one chance to escape with his honor intact, but he would need to be fast, faster than ever before. For an instant, their swords locked, edge against edge, and Garrow took the split-second opportunity. With a supreme effort, he found his chance and forced the blades apart. If the custodian had a weakness, it was his arrogance. In his rush to mark Garrow, he already thought him defeated. The legionary turned that upon him, disarming him with a shout, even though it was a huge effort to unseat the sentinel blade from his hand. Kurarin froze, his face reddening with sudden fury, before he drew back a step. Garrow held his sword steady, aiming the tip at his opponent's chest.
"You disengage," he asked, breathing hard. "The bout is not ended. I owe you a mark." "If that blade ever touches my armor," growled Kurarin, meaning every word, "I will tear you limb from limb."
Libertas dropped away, and Garrow stepped back.
"You're a poor loser. And you were lucky."
The custodian turned, gathering up his fallen sword gun.
"I underestimated you. It won't happen again."
He made a sharp gesture with the blade of his hand.
"You are dismissed, Garrow."
The legionary's collar shifted towards annoyance.
"You overstep your bounds, custodian. You do not command me. And you have no reason to hide the scope of this mission from my sight."
He returned his sword to its scabbard, daring the other warrior to disagree with him. Kurarin only paused, musing. Then he glanced over his shoulder.
"Very well. I suppose you've earned that right as your victory's reward. Come with me, and be illuminated."
He strode to the battleship's strategium, and Garrow trailed warily after him. The compartment was an oval chamber where walls lined with gas lens viewers and scrying scopes provided real-time data streams from the zone surrounding the Nalandia. In the center of the room was a tall hololithic display tank, cast with a globe made of motes of colored light. The tactical plot showed the solar system and the orbits of the planets, overlaid with the Nalandia's course. Kurarin barked a single command, and within moments he and Garrow were alone in the chamber, with only mindless servitors as witnesses. The human crewmen dithered out in the corridor as the strategium's hatch irised shut.
"What requires such a need for secrecy?" said Garrow. You will see. The custodian removed a memory capsule from a pouch on his belt and inserted it into a socket at the base of the hololith. The display shifted and transformed into a grainy loop of picked images. Garrow saw ships, a dozen of them, a ragged flotilla, drifting in space.
"This recording is from a perimeter drone stationed beyond the far orbit of Pluto," continued Kararin. "It detected multiple warp space events and moved to intercept. This is what it found. This is what we go to confront."
The vessels were of classes known to Garrow. Imperial transport craft, bulk carriers, and the like.
"Those are all civilian ships."
The custodian gave a nod of agreement.
"But they fly no pennants of authority and mark. Their origins are uncertain, and they did not come alone."
The image tracked to reveal the vessel at the head of the small fleet. It could only be a warship. The bladed prow and the layered turrets of cannons formed the distinctive shape of a fast-attack frigate, a class of ship most commonly found among the expeditionary fleets of the Legiones Astartes. Kararin shot Garrow a look.
"You recognize the frigate's livery, of course. White, trimmed with blue. That ship belongs to the 12th Legion. The World Eaters."
Kararin's words were bitter.
"The warriors who followed their traitorous gladiator king Angron to Horus's banner."
The bow of the frigate became clear, and Garrow's eyes narrowed. The name he saw there triggered a flash of memory.
"The Dagger Line. I know this ship. I've seen it before. At Istvan III, in the hours before the attack. It was part of the War Master's assembly."
When Kararin spoke again, he gestured dismissively at the hololith and made no attempt to conceal the sneer in his tone.
"You should feel a kinship with these refugees, Garrow. The crews of these ships claim to have fled the War Master's betrayal of the throne. There are civilians, soldiers from the Imperial Auxilia, merchant envoys from across the Eridan sector, and others, allegedly gathered along the path of their escape route. They say they have come through the warp storms to Terra, searching for a safe haven, just as you did."
Garrow remained silent for a long moment. When the Death Guard had turned from the Emperor, he and 70 other legionaries had commandeered the cruiser Eisenstein and escaped the horrors that followed. Months had passed since that day, but it seemed like an eternity. Garrow had carried word of the insurrection, holding tightly to his oath to Emperor and throne, but he had been judged by many for the deeds of his wayward Primarch, and tainted with suspicion. The same suspicion that burned in Kurarin's eyes.
"And this is why Malkador sent me here? To pass judgment upon them?"
The custodian frowned.
"Given your experience, he considers your insight to carry some weight. You are to assist me in the evaluation of these refugees, but their ultimate fate will be decided by the Council of Terra."
There was no doubt in Garrow's mind that whatever the full scope of his orders were, the custodian had already categorized the new arrivals as a threat.
"You don't trust them." "I trust nothing but the Emperor's word. This schism created by Horus means we no longer have the prospect of any other conviction. Insurrection corrodes such bonds."
The custodian fixed him with a gaze that shone with icy fire.
"A battle line has been drawn across the galaxy. Anyone who comes from the War Master's side is an enemy until proven otherwise." "Do I fall within that description?" demanded Garrow. "Do you consider me unreliable because my former legion betrayed the Emperor?" "You begin to understand."
Kararin eyed him coldly. Garrow met his gaze.
"I am no traitor." "History will judge that, just as these exiles will be judged. The War Master is a cunning enemy. It would be like him to send ships under cover of such a ruse, so he might infiltrate spies into the heart of the Imperium. His invasion is coming, Garrow. It is unstoppable, like my hatred for his treachery."
Kararin recovered the capsule and the hololith stuttered. He turned to leave, then hesitated.
"While we speak, one other matter must be aired. The Witchmind, Rubio."
Garrow scowled at the insulting descriptor.
"Brother Rubio is a legionary, a codicia. Such a rank no longer exists within the Legiones Astartes,"
Kararin broke in. Malkador may have given you permission to flout the Emperor's edict, but I will not tolerate it. He raised a mailed hand and pointed at the legionary. Know this. If Rubio uses his damned powers in my presence, I will put him down. Kararin strode away, leaving the open threat hanging in the air.